podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello and a glum welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket, certainly from an English perspective. That was woeful, hapless, gutless. England bowled out in just 38 overs for 124, having been 68 for none. So losing their last 10 wickets for 56 runs, one of the worst collapses, 10 wicket collapses England have ever experienced. And it's just so demoralising. And it's embarrassing to watch. From a sort of former professional cricketer's point of view, I just feel that ignominy has been reached by this England team. And even though it is the last Ashes test and it's been a tough tour and there are so many excuses, there is no excuse for batting like that, Simon.
Still last because they were bowled out for 68 at the MCG in another three-day defeat. Ian Botham, commenting on Channel 7 after the match, described their performance today as gutless. And Ricky Ponting said, not enough quality, not enough fight. And I think those two comments by two former legends of the game just about sums it up, really. I mean, it was really poor today. And one thing I would say is that Australia had the wind put up them as well when they were batting. It wasn't a great Australian batting performance today. Bowled out for 155. Mark Wood was terrific. You know, he ran in and he really got amongst them. You know, bowling really quick and short, and Australia didn't have any answer to it. But, you know, 68 for no wicket, England were going along quite nicely. And I'm sure there were people watching thinking, is this possible? Is this possible? And I made that comment last night, didn't I? That, you know, there's more chance of me flying home without an aeroplane than England winning this test match. And at 68 for no wicket, I was beginning to get a few messages from various people having made that comment last night. But you can trust England, can't you? They are like the Bank of England. You can absolutely trust them to do what they did. And, you know, what was it? 86 minutes later, they were all out for 124. Not easy conditions, I would say that. You know, it's a green pitch and pink ball and lights. But, I mean, some of that batting was absolutely appalling, wasn't it? I mean, poor shot from Ben Stokes. Should he have played in the game? You know, we talked about that on our first day podcast. Struggling in the field with his side injury. Couldn't bowl. Two low scores. Ollie Pope bowled around his pads. Sam Billings was a really tame shot. David Milan probably had other things on his mind because his wife gave birth to a daughter yesterday, 6 weeks early. So that must have been a real shock, actually, if you think about it. Hard to concentrate on a cricket match when that's going on back at home, especially when you don't expect it to happen for several weeks. Joe Root was really unlucky. Got a shooter, didn't he? I mean, that was unplayable. Sort of summed it all up, really, in a way, for Joe Root. Just walked off shaking his head. And still no Ashes 100 for Joe Root. And you do wonder whether he'll ever get one, to be honest. He presumably be back in 4 years' time. But, you know, what sort of player will he be in 4 years' time?
Yeah, and he's certainly blameless. You know, dedication, obviously a class above anyone else in the England side. The conditions were tough today, but there's no excuse for some of the dismissals, as you said. Just, you know, thoughtless, brainless. Someone like David Milan, okay, I'm sure he had other things on his mind. But I thought, you know, actually, if you look at his series, it has massively declined from a couple of really good scores in the early test, a couple of 80s, and now he can barely get a run. And he just seems as if he's totally gone into his shell, actually. And I mean, I said this on the podcast yesterday, he's too passive. And in actual fact, his dismissal today sort of summed it up, because he should have poked his bat fairly tamely at a ball and it just ricocheted off the bat. There was no sort of force or impact or, you know, positivity about the defensive shot, and the ball just ricocheted onto the stumps. And, you know, Australia have discovered some excellent bowlers, and today the standout bowler, Cameron Green, who sort of hinted at his ability last year against India and never took any wickets, and this series has looked outstanding. You know, he's up there with the likes of those West Indies fast bowlers that England came across in the 1980s, not quite at that level yet, but the potential to be, because he's got pace, he's got bounce, he's got accuracy, he moves the ball, and he seems to understand how to bowl as well. So if he can stay fit, my God, he's a handful for, you know, opposing batsmen going forwards. But, you know, that's some of the other dismissals as well were just so tame. And, it, you know, it's the end of term feel. And we talked about this yesterday about feeling, you know, you just want to go home. You, it's like the horse wanting to gallop home at the end of at the end of a ride. And you know, you are thinking of home, you know, in the back of your mind, probably in the front of your mind, even when it comes to situations like this. But just the sort of basic errors, and poor old Ollie Pope, you know, what's going through his mind, you know, first innings poking at one outside off stump and didn't need to play it because of this method of standing on off stump or standing outside off stump, and now going too far across and getting bowled leg stump and leaving whole stumps exposed. So it just, it really symbolises, it encapsulates the kind of mess that English batting is in, summed up, by the way, by the fact that their batting partnerships have averaged 20 in this series, which is one of the lowest of all time. You can give us some stat download now, can't you, Simon?
Well, yeah, I've lent on Andy Zoltzman, the Test Match Special statistician, for this, but England's average of 20.2 runs per wicket in the series is their lowest in an Ashes series since 1890, and their lowest in any Ashes series of four or more matches, but it's not actually their lowest in recent years, because when they went to India in 2021, last year, they averaged 19.83 despite scoring 500 in the first test match. So, I mean, their batting overseas has been woeful, and it's been pretty poor in England, let's face it, as well. They lost to New Zealand, and they lost to, well, they're 2-1 down to India in that series that's yet to be completed, and some of their batting in that series wasn't particularly good. Bowled out on the last day at Lord's, for example, you know, hustled out and losing that test match when they were dominating the game. It's a familiar theme, and I would agree with you. I mean, Cameron Green was excellent, because Australia, they seemed to have just lost their way a bit. England were coasting along. I mean, they got to 50 and almost, you know, 5 runs and over. The runs were coming. Burns and Crawley looked pretty secure. Boland did well at one end, just tidying things up, tying England's batters down and just strangling them a bit after a sort of profligate opening spell. And Green came on and he took out the top three. And with Milan, I accept that he did play a rather tentative shot, but he had been clonked on the helmet by a superb bouncer from round the wicket by Green that actually just kept coming at him, and it smacked into his helmet, and it probably did just make him a little bit tentative afterwards. And, you know, yeah, playing on and Green getting his wicket. You know, Burns and Crawley looked okay actually at the top, and then, you know, Burns playing on as well. Crawley, a bit of a loose drive, I thought, to Green, caught behind for 36. It just felt impossible to stem the tide, really. And when Root got that scuttler, you just thought, well, this is going to be over this evening. They might need the extra half an hour. They didn't even need, you know, the extra half hour to get to 10:30, that, you know, the scheduled close. It was done and dusted, and in the end they were just sort of swinging and slogging. It was a bit like watching a T20 game, actually. If you just switched on the television or just came into the ground, was watching it and didn't see the white close, or ignored the white close, it just looked like the last couple of overs of a T20 innings, really. Players giving themselves some room, thrashing and slogging, but, you know, by then it was done, really, wasn't it? And, you know, what a series, really. I mean, it's been so one-sided. I mean, one question it's worth asking, Oz, is, you know, is it really good for Test match cricket? Is it good for broadcasters that they show this? I mean, you know, I think they sort of quite like it in Australia, Australia winning, and it's you know, you can sort of sneer at the Poms a bit, but is it really that good for Test match cricket in general, and the Ashes? The Ashes, I don't want to really use the Ashes brand because it sort of cheapens it, really. But, you know, there is a sort of Ashes brand, and it's, you know, it's looking a bit thin, actually, that brand at the moment. It's looking a bit devalued.
I totally agree. And, you know, a lot of the Australians, I mean, I remember actually we had Mike Hussey, didn't we, on this show and on the Virtual Cricket Club early part of the series. And we said to him after the first test, when you got back to Perth and Australia had won that first test fairly handsomely, what was the feeling like in the Australian community. And he just said, look, we're happy we won, but we want a contest. We want some serious excitement and, you know, to have a bit of balance between the sides and a bit of jousting going on. And there was none of that at all. It was just England lying down and saying, you know, walk all over me most of the time. Look, this Australian side is good. You know, Pat Cummins, outstanding bowler. I've said it several times, probably one of the best bowlers Australia have ever produced. Never lets the batsman off the hook. He's just at you the whole time. High pace. I thought his skills in this series it also developed. He was showing an ability to move the ball away and back in the air and off the pitch, as well as the relentless line and length and pace and desire and sort of menace that he exudes. Obviously, we've mentioned Cameron Green, that someone like Travis Head has come through and proved a very valuable asset at number five. You know, Steve Smith hasn't had to do anything. He's only averaged 30. So, because other players have come through. Scott Boland, you know, a good seasoned professional, someone who's just done the same thing, plugged away, ploughed a furrow for years for, you know, the Victorians and playing for the Hobart Hurricanes as well in the Big Bash. You know, not a frills cricketer, just someone who's solidly good. And what a performance. 18 wickets at 9 in the series. That's partly because England batted badly against him, but also because he bowled just an excellent professional line and length at a good pace. You know, you want a contest. And the pitches have been a little bit too much in the bowler's favour, I'd say, overall, slightly. And so, therefore, the scores have been relatively low. England haven't even reached 300 once. But they should have shown a lot more gumption, a lot more fight than they have. And, yeah, it has undermined and devalued the Ashes contest concept.
Yeah, and let's not blame Australia. Not for one moment, because, you know, they go out there and do what they have to do, which is just steamroller, you know, very poor England side, you know, a woeful England side at times. Yes, there have been mitigating factors, the lack of a build-up for England, you know, the fact that, you know, they have been COVID restrictions and they've been having to put up with that for a long time. And, you know, the vibe you get from the England camp, and certainly one we got from Ashley Giles when I spoke to him before the Sydney Test match, is that, you know, it's been very difficult. It's that old, you know, that old line we talked about, you know, we may not be very good, but at least we turn up. You know, they've been turning up. They've been playing the cricket, you know, all around the world. They've been playing far more test cricket than Australia have, for example, match after match after match. They've been largely fulfilling their commitments while other series have been called off or not being arranged at all. And it has been tough. But, you know, by now, okay, they drew the last game. They showed a bit of fight. But you felt they, you know, could have been able to get into the series. But, you know, it was just like a sort of after the Lord Mayor show sort of match, this one, really. It was sort of wham, bam, wasn't it? And played at a high pace and without too much care and attention. Having said that, you know, the pitch was a bit lively and it was the pink ball and it was under lights. And it is worth bearing in mind as well that Hobart, or the ground at Hobart, was underwater about, you know, a week and a half ago. They'd had a lot of rain. And so that perhaps had something to do with the pitch that the match was played on. But, you know, it wasn't a great look, and it hasn't been a great look from England. And in a way, there's part of me, I know we both predicted 3-1 at the start of the series. There's part of me that actually didn't mind what happened to England today, because what you didn't want was a sort of papering over the cracks victory in a way. And so actually now it might just concentrate some minds and say, hold on a second, this cannot be allowed to continue. This is really poor, and that, you know, there has to be a raising of standards. And, you know, you go to India, you get absolutely thumped on spinning pitches. Go to Australia, get thumped on pitches that are, well, actually, a little bit like English pitches. Now, this one was a little bit like that. Probably more pace and bounce than you normally get in England, you know. Mm. But it's not just that. It's not just going to India. It's not just going to Australia. It's also what's happening in England as well, where England are losing test matches and they're struggling, especially against the better sides. So, in a way, let's hope that this is a sort of right. Real serious think about the way the game
watershed
is
moment.
Yeah.
Watershed moment. And okay, let's have a look at the England batting averages just for the sake of a bit of a depressing
story. Hammer House of Horrors.
Yes, exactly. Johnny Bairstow, 48 average, but only two matches. Joe Root, 32, did his absolute best. Zach Crawley's finished with 27. David Milan, 24. That's disappointing, really. And then you go down Stokes, 23. Butler, 15. Burns, 12. And Ollie Pope, 11. Hamid, 10. So, you know, that's the kind of state of play we're in with English batting. And, you know, actually, I thought Paul Farber's made a really interesting observation in our virtual cricket club the other night. He was on our first day podcast talking about Hanuma Vihari, who came over to England to do a little bit of work with Warwickshire, and I think was in the squad. I think he was in the squad for the Birmingham Phoenix, or he was in Warwickshire at Edgbaston for some reason. I've forgotten what he said the reason was now. And he went in and had a net at Edgbaston, and the ball was nipping around, seaming around all over the place. And he played immaculately, and all the other batsmen, the Warwickshire batsmen, whoever was around, stopped and just watched. And watched his simple method, a sort of Joe Root type method, standing on middle and leg and playing with the ball beside him. And they just were kind of dumbfounded. And this is a guy who isn't even in the first Indian 11, although he's on the fringes and probably will get in. And he has played a few tests. But he's averaging in the mid-50s in Indian first-class cricket. And, you know, he's in their sort of second 11, really. But he has a very nice basic method. And all the young England batsmen were just watching him going, God, I'd like to play like that. And that's what England need. You know, they need... Actually, I think what I would do is I would pick out the best parts of some of Joe Root's innings over this series. You know, his defence, his shot selection, his concentration. Just almost highlight, I don't know, half an hour of the best bits of his innings and just put that together and say, that is how you've got to bat. And everybody's got to do that. And everybody's got to try and apply that technique, that playing the ball quite late, scoring options, concentration, and trusting your defence, not trying to go after the ball all the time, even on a pitch which is not easy to play on. Just stay in and play in an orthodox manner. And the more English batsmen who can just learn to do that, and it's going to take time, the more they can build innings and get into better situations in these kind of series.
Yeah, I was watching Joe Root's post-match press conference. I mean, he looked a bit shell-shocked, really. I mean, he almost looked like he was on the verge of tears. I'm sure he wasn't, but it was a sort of that feel I got, you know, a sense of being... You know, this was another sort of real low. And he was talking about, you know, we've got to learn and, you know, try to move forward and learn as a team. Then got long, actually, before they're back in action again, really. You normally think, you know, an Ashes series, you get a chance to sort of recuperate. Well, in the middle of January now, and there's another series starting at the beginning of March. So, you know, go back for a couple of weeks and then have to be back in training and working hard. And I suppose that they'll have to work out as well who goes and who stays. But I mean, they've said during this series, we've got the best 17, 18 players on this tour. So I don't know who else they can have a look at. You know, there's no form to go on, is there? You know, you can't sort of say, well, you know, there are first-class matches going on. We can take him, and we have a go with him. I know they've got all the people in their databases and all that, and they'll have video banks of all their players, and they'll know what's there. But, you know, you do wonder how different the team for the first test in the Caribbean will be from this lineup. One thing I would like to highlight is, well, we've touched on Cameron Green already, actually, but I also like to show the contrast. You've done some stats on England's batters. The contrast in the two all-rounders and Green in this series, 13 wickets at 15 and an average of 32 with the bat. Struggled to start with, gradually came to terms with it, scored some runs. And then Ben Stokes, 4 wickets at 71. And then, you know, with the bat, you know, not the figures that you would hope for from someone of Ben Stokes' quality. What, averaging around about 23 in the series, despite a couple of scores. So, you know, Green, the sort of the new kid on the block, really. We saw his promise last year against India, and he, you know, he's definitely won. It's not a head-to-head battle as such, is it? But of the two all-rounders, he's had a triumphant series, really, compared to Ben Stokes. We know how much England missed Ben Stokes last time. but finger injury and a long time out of the game, and it just took him too long to get in the series, and then he got injured again.
No, absolutely not. But actually, Green's impact encapsulated by his fielding as well. Fielding in the gully with this massive wingspan, stopping anything within about a 10 meter range, and totally eager as well, as you'd expect a young player to be in his first Ashes series, you know, diving all over the place and absolutely up for it. And Stokes, meanwhile, not in his usual position in the slip because of his finger injury, also hampered by his rib injury as well, side injury, and so not really able to play a full part in the field either. And just kind of there were sort of chasms apart in their contributions in the series. I mean, one other person, just to mention batting-wise, Mitchell Starc, number 9 for Australia, 155 runs, average 38. Well, just shows you that, you know, A, the pitches were tricky, and so quite often, you know, there were low, wickets fell, but actually lower order runs were very important. But in his case, there were opening stands and, you know, better partnerships that meant he came in later, but also he wielded the willow with effect to average 38. Well, and that just rubs insult into the wounds that you've already suffered when you're struggling in the game and the bowlers are getting tired, and someone like Mitchell Starc comes in and bashes you around, you know, for a sort of quick 40. So, you know, they had so many answers, Australia, and England had very, very few.
And I know it was a bowling series generally, but actually when it really mattered in those first two test matches, Australia managed to dig out 400. You talked earlier about, you know, that idea of, you know, staying in and being having a tight technique. When it mattered, Labuschagne, Smith and Warner actually did produce some runs at the start of the series in those first two test matches, and that was the rock on which Australia's victory was founded. So here's a question then, Jos. How good is this Australian side? I mean, a lot of people said, oh, it's not, you know, England should have done better. They're not that far away from them. They're, you know, they're not that good a side. Well, they I don't think they are as good as the sides of, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, that was, you know, they had a sort of almost had a gun player in every single position in those sides. But how good is this Australian side, do you think?
Well, I mean, that side of 2001 to 2005 had seven greats. The openers, Hayden and Langer, followed by Ponting. You could class a Mark and Steve Waugh in greats category. Gilchrist, McGrath, Warren. So, you know, they had a fantastic seven or eight core players. This side, you'd say, obviously, Cummins, Starc, Hazelwood are on a par with Warren, McGrath and one other. But Warren, obviously, a genius. So, you know, he's above anyone, really, I'd say. And then batting-wise, they haven't got the openers. They haven't got Hayden and Langer, but they have got Smith and Labuschagne. So I suppose you could say Smith and Labuschagne are sort of like the Waughs, really, but no openers in the same class as Hayden and Langer. And not quite as good a bowling attack either, because Warren and McGrath were such elite characters. So, yeah, I mean, sort of 80% of that Australian team of the early 2000s, I suppose, 75 to 80% as good, but not quite in their league, no.
Yeah, and they've got Nathan Lyon as well, who amazingly didn't even get a bowl in this game.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely incredible. He scored, you know, far more runs than he actually bowled deliveries. Which, if you said to him that at the start of the match, I think you'd have been quite surprised. But I thought he was really instrumental in the first part of the series as well. One person we haven't mentioned is Travis Head, who sort of bizarrely came up as the player of the series. I mean, he made a couple of hundreds. He was the leading run scorer in a series in which, you know, both teams were quite thin on runs. I would say that Australia would have still won the Ashes. I mean, you could say they won the Ashes with all sorts of contributions, but I sort of feel they probably would have won the Ashes without his contributions, his hundreds. I mean, this one was a sort of icing on the cake innings. I mean, well, and an icing on cake victory as well. The one in Brisbane, where he came in when they were 195 for four, already about 40 runs ahead, and it just sort of emphasised Australia's strong position and just confirmed, you know, taking a game away from England. Then, of course, he missed a Test match. So, you know, his player of the series was based on those 200. For me, Pat Cummins was the player of the series. 21 wickets, the captain, the leader, the focal point for the side. And it's also worth referring to an interview that Justin Langer did after the match as well, Yoz, where he was sort of asked about England's problems and, you know, the bubbles and the pressure being away from home for so long and all that sort of stuff. And he said, well, we haven't really concentrated on them, but we've had our own problems. People forget that. You know, we had to change our captain before the start of the series. Josh Hazlewood missed four test matches, you know, one of our main bowlers. Travis Head missed a game, our player of the series. Pat Cummins missed the second test match because he tested positive with COVID. So, you know, they've had their issues as well, and they have been able to overcome them. But I thought Cummins was the player of the series. For me, 21 wickets at 18, occasionally some useful runs as well, led the side, and also set the tone as well. I mean, I did quite like the fact, and it's a bit unusual, but I did quite like the fact that it was, generally speaking, a pleasant series. There wasn't any of that sort of snarling and nastiness that sometimes we've seen in the past. Perhaps that's just me, as I'm getting older, I'm getting softer. But, you know, it seemed to be played in a pretty decent spirit. You could argue that it was a bit, you know, England were a bit handpicked for harmlessness, really. And so it was easy to sort of brush them aside and not have to really get stuck into them. But anyway, so Australia won the friendly Ashes 4-0. Hurrah.
Well, captained by Captain Colgate as well. Cummins, yeah, you know, a superb ambassador for the game, actually. And just, I mean, I just think he's a wonderful bowler. He's lovely to watch. He's constantly improving. I was listening to Alistair Cook actually in the BT studio just saying, I'm glad I'm not out there. You know, he's just incredibly tough to play. And he seems to have this appetite, almost like a batsman who wants to bat and bat and bat. He seems to have the appetite as a bowler to want to bowl and bowl and bowl and take on the responsibility. And he's absolutely relentless. And you know, you can build a team round a bowler like that. So they need him to stay fit, of course, and remarkably he is. Seems to be sort of almost bulletproof at the moment. So, yeah, congratulations to him. He handles the team with great aplomb. It's easy when you've got the quality of bowlers that he has to call on. Also, by the way, Australia's fielding was brilliant. But then, it always is, isn't it? When games are going your way, it seems like things in the field happen, but run out, opportunities are taken, sharp catches are snapped up, things on the boundary are intercepted. I don't know. I mean, everything went Australia's way, but they deserved it because they just played far superior cricket all round.
Yeah. What were our main memories of the series then, just to wrap up and bring this podcast to an end? What sort of caught your attention? What was your main moment of the series, or main moments of the series, big plays?
Burns getting bowled out, first ball of the series for a start. Definitely that. I think Cummins bowling, Cameron Green's bowling. I thought, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say that, you know, watching him. Tell you what, I saw Ian Bishop when he first came through for the West Indies before he got a back injury. And Cameron Green is not far off Ian Bishop. Ian Bishop bowled very high pace from close to the stumps, from 6 foot five without swing, with a beautiful seam position. He was a handful. He was serious. And Green is not far away from that. So that was one standout as well. From an England point of view, there's not much. Mark Wood's tenacity and effervescence and enthusiasm is probably the one thing I'll remember, really. We knew about Joe Root's batting skill. We were worried about a lot of the other players, and our worries have come home to roost.
Yeah, I think we both felt that, as India did in the summer, that they would unpick some of England's issues, really pick at them, almost like a bird sort of pecking away, and they did. India and Australia did exactly the same. They exposed England's weaknesses. I think memories for me, yeah, definitely Burns. Stokes' no ball to Warner in that first test in the Gabba, when Warner was on 17, went on to score 90-odd. That felt like a big moment at the time. I also loved that hour at the MCG. It was like the Coliseum when England lost four wickets and Boland picked up a couple. Jack Leach was out playing no shot. And Ben Stokes was watching on the sideline saying, I'm not sure how I'd play this. You know, Mitchell Starc picked up a couple of wickets. The crowd was up. It was a tremendous atmosphere inside the MCG. I think I'll remember that for a long time. I think that was the most visceral cricket of the series. And then I suppose Jimmy Anderson blocking out the final over just to prevent the whitewash. It wasn't a whitewash last time. It isn't a whitewash this time. But it feels like, you know, a pretty small consolation. That was supposed to be the sort of the draw that might giving them the lift and help them to Hobart in favourable conditions. But actually, they all just went down in a heap, and it was a sort of glum festival sort of end to the series, really. With you know, without that sort of real sort of hard nosed determination to tough it out.
Yeah. Well, so there we go. It's a depressing final act from an English point of view. And there of course will be calls for all sorts of people to be sacked and dropped and so on. I do wonder whether Joe Root will carry on as captain. There have been one or two people saying send for Owen Morgan to captain England, and you know, he couldn't do any worse, sort of thing. And I mention that because actually Owen Morgan is our guest in the Virtual Cricket Club on Tuesday evening to talk about England's next campaign, which is starting very, very soon with some T20 internationals in the West Indies in about the 21st of January, I think is the first one, or 22nd of January. So Owen's in our Virtual Cricket Club direct from Barbados on Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. And actually, it'd be lovely if you could join us for that, because I want to ask him about the Ashes, of course, as well as looking ahead and celebrating England's white ball performances. So it very quickly turns from red ball to white ball, which is probably a good thing from England's point of view. And as I say, you can join us and ask Owen Morgan a question yourself in our Virtual Cricket Club, which has become a very engaging community to be part of, and some very funny and interesting comments made by the members of that group over the last few weeks as England have slumped from one piece of despair to another. So you can join us in that club by going to worldsbestcricketclub.com. Owen Morgan, 7 p.m. Tuesday night. That'll be fun. And I'm sorry that you might not be up in time for that, because you won't have made it back yet.
I might not be, Oz. I'll see how we go. I'll see what the timings are and various things. It's amazing, isn't it, how the bandwagon just rolls on, though, isn't it? The Ashes series comes to an end, and you know, England's men are out in the Caribbean for T20 series, because the women are starting the women's Ashes series very soon as well, with some T20s, and then the Test match, and then the one-day internationals that lead into the World Cup. So the focus will very quickly turn. The cricket world just never stops, does it? There's always some game going on somewhere. And of course, one thing we haven't mentioned at all, Yoz, I mean, right at the end here, we're talking about Joe Root's future as captain, to where Pat Cummins, you know, seems to be the coming thing. Virat Kohli announcing that he is standing down as India's Test captain. You know, the king is dead. You know, it's all come to an end. He's no longer white ball captain. He's no longer red ball captain.
Well, it's just tough, isn't it? If you're the number one batsman in a team and captain, in the relentlessness of the modern game, and you know, you're playing either two or three formats, which both Root and Kohli are, it's just incredibly tough, and something has to give. And you know, they're desperate to make lots of runs, those guys. I mean, that's their kind of staple diet, isn't it? That's how they got to where they are, is by just batting and batting and batting. And that's what they want to carry on doing. So fair enough to give other people the task. I mean, it always happens when you've got heavily defeated or fairly defeated that you're considering your position. So Kohli's gone as well. That was a good win by South Africa, and they're an emerging side too. You know, good bowling attack, a couple of new faces there. Jansen, the left arm, tall left arm fast bowler, batting at number 8 as well. He had an impact. The young Keegan Peterson, number 3 batsman, looks very promising. So, you know, South Africa are coming back into the fold, I think, in Test cricket, which is actually good to see. England, well, you know, as you say, we shouldn't draw the veil over this horrible performance. Well, maybe we do need to draw the veil over it, but definitely steps need to be taken to redress the balance between red and white. But let's hope the white ball team can at least restore some pride, and also the England women as well, and get something from their trip to Australia, which is just about started.
So there we go, Yoz. The Men's Ashes series is over. I'm coming home in a couple of days' time, released from captivity tomorrow, from my COVID captivity after 7 days of isolation. It meant I could watch every ball on the TV and observe the television coverage.
Must have been
as well,
purgatory.
Which is interesting. Well, it's funny, actually. You know, I was saying earlier about how, you know, do they still love the Ashes out here? And, you know, is it got a bit dull? And do they want a contest? You can walk up and down the sort of corridor behind the commentary boxes. And there's about seven different broadcasts going on, mainly Australian, obviously Test Match Special and BT Sport done their own commentary in the last three games. They're mainly Australian. And you can still hear the enthusiasm when Australia take a wicket. You know, it's really there. And, it, you know, the shouting and the hollering and the celebrating and, yeah, it's still there. So I think they've enjoyed themselves. I think they probably enjoyed themselves more this time than they did in 2010-11. But I think the Ashes in Australia do need a bit more of a contest in the future. Of course, I mean, it's easy to forget, actually, the last time in England, it was actually a cracking series, and it finished 2-2, and there were some amazing highs and some great drama. You know, Smith double hundred at Edgbaston, or 200s at Edgbaston, and Stokes winning at Headingley, and England pressing for victory at Lord's, and Australia pressing for victory at Old Trafford. So it's not all doom and gloom in terms of the Ashes brand, if you like. But it does need to perk up a bit in Australia. I think I've seen, it's like reading the same old book over and over again, and not a very enjoyable book as well. But you know, you've got to get to the end of it. So there we go. That is the end.
Roll on the 2023 Ashes, which of course isn't that far away now. It's only a year and a few months, and Australia will be on our shores. So hopefully it'll be a better contest than this one was. Well, we can't even call it a contest, can you? Listen, we need to let you go, and we need to let the listeners go as well, and try and regain some kind of lost appetite for life by having a drink or something.
It's only sport.
That's true. Absolutely right. So we'll be back with... what we're going to do is we'll have this Owen Morgan chat on Tuesday night, and then we'll create a podcast out of it. So our next podcast will be a look ahead to England's one-day series in the West Indies. For the meantime, sorry to everyone for that hapless end to the Ashes series from an England perspective, but hope for better things on the horizon, and we'll speak to you soon.
Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.